This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
About 10 years ago, summer sea ice crashed around Antarctica. Vast areas of the sea were exposed to full solar power, changing ocean currents and the atmosphere. We need to explore what this abrupt change means. Edward Doddridge is research fellow in physical oceanography at the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies, that is in Tasmania. On July 1, 2025, Doddridge and 24 co-authors published a list of serious impacts from missing sea ice at the southern pole. From Tasmania, Edward Doddridge, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
It's great to be here, Alex.
When I started broadcasting, the Arctic was losing summer sea ice, and it was very alarming, but Antarctica was gaining it almost. When did that change, and do we know why?
For a long time, this was so strange. It was something we called the Antarctic Paradox. And you're absolutely right. For decades there, Antarctica was gaining sea ice very, very slowly, but still, there was a positive trend. That all changed in about 2014, 2015. So the winter maximum in 2014 was the largest extent of sea ice around Antarctica that we've ever seen. And since then, it has dropped very, very rapidly. Now, we think that there were a few things that all came together to cause Antarctic sea ice to be expanding. One of those was the westerly winds were changing, largely because of the ozone hole. And that was making them a bit stronger, and those stronger winds were helping push cold water from Antarctica northwards. And that was making it a little bit easier to freeze and form the ice. We also know that the ice sheet on Antarctica was melting. And so we were getting some fresh cold water coming in at the surface. And that was also helping to isolate the surface ocean from the warmer ocean below it and expand the amount of sea ice. As I said, in 2015 or so, that all changed. 2016 and 17 were record lows, and since then, Antarctic sea ice has been almost constantly below that long-term average.
In a handy explainer in the conversation, you list four major impacts when Antarctic sea ice fails to form. I'd like to take them in order. First, you say ocean warming is compounding. Please explain.
So this is one of the big changes that we are really worried about for the extreme loss of summer sea ice in the Antarctic. Historically, the system reset every year. During winter, there was lots and lots of cooling, and any heat that had accumulated in the upper ocean just got vented out into the atmosphere. The ocean got cold, and the sea ice formed. We did a modeling study for this paper, and it showed that when you have an extreme loss of sea ice, like we did in the 2016-17 summer, or any of the past four summers, our model suggested it took over 3 years for that impact to dissipate. So you had heating because the ocean is darker and it absorbs more sunlight and it warms up during that summer. But rather than just disappearing over the wintertime, that heat sticks around. And if it sticks around to the next summer, and the next summer is a really low sea ice summer, you can build on that warming with more warming. And the last four summers that we've had have all been much, much lower than anything else we saw since the satellite record began in the late 1970s, which raises the really alarming possibility that warming from one summer is built on by the next summer, and this warmth compounds, and that's going to make it much, much harder to go back to a state where we're growing more sea ice.
And the second point was expect more icebergs. Why, and does that matter?
So this might not be something you really expect from sea ice changes, but one of the things that sea ice does is it dissipates the energy in ocean waves. The waves come in and they hit the sea ice, and as they break up the ice, they lose all of their energy and they get much, much smaller. So that means in a summer where there's almost no ice around the edge of Antarctica, that lots of that wave energy gets all the way to the coastal regions of Antarctica. And when it gets to the coast, it can hit the ice shelves, which are the floating extensions of the ice sheet on Antarctica. And those waves break and damage and fatigue those ice shelves to the point where they lose parts of themselves as icebergs. So parts of the ice shelf break off as icebergs and drift away. Now, losing an iceberg like that doesn't directly raise sea level, but what it does is it stops the ice shelves from being able to hold back all of the ice on the continent. So breaking away bits of the ice shelf lets the ice on the land flow into the ocean faster, and that's accelerating sea level rise. Now, we found that in a year with extreme low sea ice, you've got about twice as many icebergs as a normal year. So that's a really big difference, and it's also a process that isn't really included in our climate models, which means that future projections don't include this process that we've just identified, suggesting that sea level rise might happen even faster than our models are currently predicting.
Well, okay, and tell us about the wildlife who depend on that summer sea ice.
Almost all of the wildlife around Antarctica uses the sea ice in some form or another. Sometimes they'll use it as a refuge, as a place to hide from predators, or as a place to find food. So krill, for example, the tiny little crustaceans that essentially underpin the entire food web of the Southern Ocean, when they're larvae in their first winter, they come up and they live underneath the sea ice and they feed on the algae that grows on the base of it. So we think that that winter sea ice is super, super critical for those krill to get through their first year. And any change to that sea ice is going to have really big impacts on their ability to reproduce and to grow. But there are loads of other examples of this. Emperor penguins, perhaps the most iconic Antarctic species, they use sea ice as a breeding platform. So they form their colonies near the coast on a particular type of sea ice called fast ice. And it's called fast ice because it's fastened to the land. It's stuck there. And they go, they form their colonies, and the males incubate the eggs over the winter. If you've ever seen those incredible documentaries with the penguins all huddled in the cold. But it takes quite a while for the eggs to hatch and then for the chicks to grow and develop. And so as summer approaches, there's a race. The chicks need to grow up to the point where they have their adult feathers and they can go into the water safely before the ice breaks up. And historically, emperor penguins have done a beautiful job of being really in tune with that balance. But lately, the rhythm and the cycle of sea ice has been changing, and it's been breaking up earlier and earlier before those chicks are ready. And if that ice disappears before the chicks are ready and they have their adult plumage, they can't survive in the water. So the ice breaks up and every chick in that colony dies. This is a pretty confronting thing to find. There are other animals like crab-eater seals that give birth on the ice, and they need large, stable ice platforms for a few weeks while they're weaning their pups. If they don't have that, they're at greater risk of being preyed upon by predators like orcas. And lots of species of seal and penguin go onto the ice to replace their feathers or their fur. And while they're doing that, they need to stay out of the water because just like the emperor penguin chicks, they're not particularly waterproof, which means if they get wet, they get hypothermic, they lose lots of energy and potentially die. So the wildlife around Antarctica has evolved to a point where it is really in tune with the rhythms of the sea ice, and changes to that have enormous impacts on all of those creatures.
I was surprised to find that lack of sea ice can make access to Antarctica more difficult for the base supply ships. I thought it might be easier to get to shore without it.
It's a bit counterintuitive, isn't it? So, in one sense, you're right. Without sea ice, you could take a normal boat right up to the shore. But National Antarctic programs actually use the sea ice as a platform to unload onto. So they don't need to build a wharf if you can have sea ice that you drive your trucks out onto and you load up from the ship directly. Now, if that sea ice is no longer thick enough or stable enough or it breaks up too early in the season, you can't use it like that, which means either you need to unload onto small boats and ferry everything back and forth across the open water like that, which is very difficult and very weather dependent, or you need a wharf. Now, some Antarctic stations do have wharves. A lot of them don't. And the ones that don't currently use sea ice to unload. So we expect that as summertime sea ice becomes less reliable, less stable, and disappears in many cases, these programs won't be able to use it as a platform for unloading supplies and fuel to the stations.
As Good Science does, your team's review of ice loss impacts raise even more questions. Is the area of ice loss large enough to significantly alter the reflectivity of Earth? Does it change Earth energy imbalance?
Absolutely. It really does. So you might have heard of something called polar amplification. And this is the process whereby the poles warm up faster than the rest of the world. And that's essentially because as they lose sea ice, during the summertime, they absorb more of the incoming sunlight and energy from the sun. Now, when we talk about global warming, we often talk about it in terms of radiative forces, which is how much extra energy is the Earth absorbing over every square meter because of greenhouse gases. At the moment, that's about 3 watts per meter squared more energy because of greenhouse gases. And sea ice loss is adding an extra 10 to 15% to that energy imbalance. So you can think of it as the loss of sea ice in the poles is making climate change about 10 to 15% worse than it would be if the sea ice weren't changing. And that's a pretty huge number just from the loss of one part of the climate system.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex with our guest, Edward Doddridge. He's a research fellow in physical oceanography at the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies in Tasmania. He led a study examining all the ways the surprising loss of Antarctic sea ice changes the world. What is the impact on the flow of the ocean currents around Antarctica when there is no sea ice above? Does it make a difference?
This is right on the edge of our understanding at the moment. So there are lots of different ocean currents around, and we know that the surface currents interact with the sea ice really directly. When the sea ice is there, the currents flow underneath and they rub on the ice, and they're actually losing energy through that process. So the sea ice slows down ocean currents, it slows down the weather systems of the ocean, we call them eddies. And so losing sea ice could potentially mean that those currents are a little bit stronger, those eddies live for a little bit longer. But there are also deeper ocean currents that are impacted by sea ice in different ways. So when sea ice forms, it leaves behind this cold, salty brine that sinks down into the deep ocean, eventually flowing down the continental shelves and filling up the deep abyss. As we form less sea ice, we expect to be forming less of that cold, salty brine, and so we might be slowing down those deep ocean currents. Now, this is also related to the melt of the ice on the land on both Antarctica and Greenland, because as you put that fresh water into the ocean, it also slows down those deep ocean currents. So teasing apart exactly how much of it is due to sea ice changes and how much due to the ice sheet melt is a bit of a tricky problem. But we expect to have really huge changes in that deep overturning circulation in the coming decades. And in fact, we have some measurements suggesting it might already have slowed down by 30%.
What does it mean that sea ice is now disappearing seasonally at both poles at once? I mean, if the alternating polar sea ice was based on astronomical factors like changes in Earth's tilt towards the sun, why are those factors not working now?
So we are still seeing a really strong seasonal impact on sea ice. There is more in the wintertime in both the Arctic and the Antarctic than there is during the summer. So that impact of the Earth's tilt and the seasons is still really maybe the dominant control on sea ice. And what we're seeing really is a drop in sea ice across all seasons at both poles now. And so I don't think it's really that we're losing the impact of the orbital factors, things like the Earth's tilt or the sun's angle, that sort of stuff. Really what we're seeing is the impact of the Earth becoming warmer. And now, for quite a long time, our climate models have told us that a warmer Earth should have less ice. And really, that just makes sense from a really basic, intuitive perspective. But it's always nice when our big computer models and our tools and the algorithms we use give us answers that make sense. And as I said before, for a while, the question was, why isn't Antarctica losing ice? That was the paradox, the thing that we didn't really understand. And we are now at a point where both poles are losing ice all the time. And so the question now is understanding how rapidly is that going to continue into the future.
Did you, by any chance, look at the effect of disappearing Antarctic sea ice on plankton, the base of the food chain?
We did. We tried looking at this. Now, there are a few caveats, and as a scientist, obviously, I love my caveats. Looking at the phytoplankton, the tiny little plants at the base of the food chain, is really hard. If you use satellites, you can't see through clouds and you can't see through the sea ice, which means that you can only measure how much chlorophyll, the little green pigment in phytoplankton, there is when the skies are clear and the ocean doesn't have any ice on top. Now, around Antarctica, those two things happen a lot. There's a lot of cloud, there's a lot of ice, which means that our measurements aren't as regular and consistent as we would like. But we do have some measurements. We also have measurements from these autonomous drifting robotic floats that go around the ocean. They sit at about a kilometer deep, and every 10 days they sink down to 2 kilometers, and then they come back up to the surface. And some of them are covered in these really amazing sensors that measure all sorts of biological and chemical properties. And so those can tell us how much phytoplankton there is in the top 2 kilometers. And if we combine all of these measurements, we can try and understand how the plankton is changing with the sea ice. Now, our expectation was that when you had extra sea ice melt, you would form a little layer of colder, fresher water at the surface of the ocean, and that layer would have more iron than the rest of the ocean around it. And the iron is really critical, because around Antarctica, iron is the limiting ingredient in phytoplankton growth. There's lots of nitrate and phosphate and the other nutrients they need, but iron is the one that they are always looking for. So we expected that sea ice melt would lead to an earlier growth of phytoplankton and probably more growth of phytoplankton. Now, what we found was a bit confusing. In some places we saw that signal, in some places we didn't, and we haven't been able to dig down to exactly what is controlling the differences there. So that is still an open question, but we expect sea ice to be impacting the growth of these phytoplankton. We just haven't worked out exactly what's going on yet.
Another new paper came out in Nature on June 18th, led by Elise Drost, and that study finds, quote, sea ice duration controls ocean stratification. So more open ocean adds to mixing, which brings up carbon-rich waters, increasing release of carbon dioxide, the main warming gas. What are your thoughts on the relationships between sea ice and the carbon cycle?
This is one of the potential impacts of sea ice loss that really, really worries me. At the moment, we know that the Southern Ocean is what we call a sink of CO2. It absorbs more carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere than it releases back. So overall, the Southern Ocean is taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and moving it down into the ocean. Now, that's really important for us, because when it takes carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, it stops that carbon dioxide from warming up the planet. So the Southern Ocean is really helping us a lot at the moment by keeping global warming lower than it would otherwise be. Now, a lot of the processes that are involved in taking that carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and moving it into the ocean are intimately tied to sea ice. So there's the physical process whereby CO2 just dissolves into the ocean, and that's really sensitive to the temperature. So the warmer the ocean water is, the less CO2 it can absorb. As we lose ice, we know the ocean warms up, so that suggests that maybe losing the sea ice will inhibit the amount of CO2 that can dissolve into the ocean. The other process that's really important is biology. So the phytoplankton, just like plants on land, consume carbon dioxide and sunlight and release oxygen, and then they grow, something eats them, or they die and they sink down into the deep ocean. And again, that is a route for getting carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and the surface ocean down into the deep ocean, where it no longer contributes to global warming. as the sea ice changes, we expect the ocean currents to change and the biology to change, as well as the physics of the upper ocean. So that paper you mentioned was a regional case study looking at a time series just near one of the Antarctic stations in the Antarctic Peninsula. And they found that in years when there was less sea ice, the atmosphere and the wind mixed the upper ocean and mixed carbon from the deep ocean up to the surface so that it could go back out into the atmosphere. Now, it's a little difficult to extrapolate from a regional case study like that to all the way around Antarctica, but the processes involved make sense. You lose ice, you get more wind mixing at the surface of the ocean, and you have the potential to bring carbon back up from the ocean into the atmosphere. So if we are indeed on the precipice of a new regime where the sea ice has changed, and that change in sea ice reduces the Southern Ocean's ability to absorb carbon dioxide, that is not good news for us at all, because it suggests that the loss of sea ice not only warms the planet faster by absorbing more sunlight and energy, but it also is going to accelerate global warming by reducing the amount of carbon dioxide that goes into the ocean, or potentially even taking carbon dioxide out of the ocean and putting it back into the atmosphere. Either of those processes would make the world warm up even faster.
An earlier study in Nature, December 18, 2024, found record low Antarctic sea ice in 2023, increased ocean heat loss, and storms. Wow. I mean, Antarctica is already one of the stormiest places in the world. That's where the scary Mariner stories come from. Did you cover storms in your paper, or how do you see this developing?
Yeah, I saw that paper too. Absolutely. This is already an incredibly stormy place. You know, the roaring 40s, the furious 50s, strong winds and big storms. So we didn't look at storminess directly in our paper, but one of the things that we should be aware of when we're talking about storms in the Southern Ocean is that the stronger the wind is, the bigger the waves are. And so those big waves will come and hit the sea ice and break it up. And you can actually see when a big storm passes through, because it breaks up the sea ice and it reduces the amount of sea ice coverage. So this is another possible feedback that should really worry us, because when you lose wintertime sea ice, that study shows that you get more storms and storminess around Antarctica. And those storms are going to generate bigger waves, which is going to help break up the ice and reduce the ice coverage even more, fueling more heat from the ocean going into the atmosphere and driving more storms. That sort of positive feedback loop suggests that we may end up with more storms and less ice as an ongoing feature around Antarctica.
Well, led by Simon Josie from the Oceanography Center in Southampton, this team also found lower summer sea ice led to, quote, an unprecedented doubling of midwinter ocean heat loss. How does that work, Edward?
So during the wintertime, the atmosphere is really cold around Antarctica. And the thing about the ocean is that it has what's called, it has a really large heat capacity. So heat capacity is how we measure the amount of energy that it takes to change the temperature of something. So air has a lower heat capacity. It can't hold as much energy for every given temperature change. But water has an enormous heat capacity. It's also really dense compared to air. And so the seasonal variation in the ocean temperature is much less than the atmosphere temperature. So during winter, the atmosphere is much colder than the ocean, and so heat is moving from the ocean into the atmosphere. So that study by Simon Josie and the others at the National Oceanography Centre in Southampton found that you had much more heat going into the atmosphere from the ocean. And as we've talked about already, the loss of summer sea ice leads to the surface ocean absorbing more heat from the incoming sunlight. And so it's storing a bit more heat. As you get to the winter, that heat comes out into the atmosphere.
Your research depends partly on steady data from the U.S. Department of Defense satellites. What is the latest on that?
This has been a bit of a moving feast. So a couple of months ago, the US Department of Defense announced that they were no longer going to be providing the data from a particular set of satellites. So these are the Defense Meteorological Satellite Program satellites. They are, as satellites go, quite old satellites, and they are past their official end-of-life period. But when a satellite is up in the space and is still working, we usually like to collect the data from it because that data is very valuable. So they announced that they were going to cut that off even though the satellites were still working. The community were alarmed and concerned about this because one of the things that we like to do as scientists is we like to have a really long, consistent time series of data where we can look at the measurements from this year and we can compare them to measurements 20 years ago or 40 years ago and trust that those comparisons can give us really good measurements of how things are changing. Now, we have other satellites that we can use to measure sea ice, and in many ways you could argue they're actually better satellites. The sensors are more advanced, they give us higher resolution measurements, so the grid size for the pixels in the photos is smaller, so you get more information from them. But the problem is comparing those more modern satellites with the older measurements is really tricky. And we haven't yet, as a community, come up with a way to do really accurate comparisons between them. And so losing that long time series is going to affect our ability to monitor how things are changing over time. Now, the US Department of Defense have said that they will continue to provide the data until September 2026, which is the official cutoff date for the satellites. That is the absolute end of life. At that point, they will no longer be running those satellites. So, in one sense, it's fabulous that they are going to continue providing the data right up until the very end. It was concerning simply to be told that this data stream was going to finish, and we're very grateful that they have relented on that and engaged with the community to some extent. It's nice that it gives us the best part of a year to work out, to continue calibrating and cross-comparing these two different products so we can have the best possible time series. Changing sensors is always going to be a bit of a problem for us. That's just the reality of trying to work with really long time series.
And finally, I hope to find out more about Antarctic sea ice loss and teleconnections. I found a half dozen papers suggesting teleconnections from tropical conditions influence sea ice around the Southern Ocean. What about the other way around? Surely such a large seasonal change in the Southern Ocean must influence weather beyond the pole, maybe in South America, Australia, or even right up to North America. What do we know?
At the moment, we don't know a lot about this. There hasn't been a huge amount of work on trying to understand how the sea ice changes are going to affect weather and climate further north. Now, you mentioned connections from the tropics down to Antarctica. Absolutely, that's very well established, and we have some of the mechanisms involved in that, particular atmospheric processes that help transfer those signals from the tropics to the pole. There has been a little bit of work trying to understand how the sea ice changes may affect things further north. One study suggested that massive losses of Antarctic sea ice could change the rainfall in Australian farming regions by 20 to 30%, which is a pretty significant change if you're trying to farm crops or animals in those areas. But this is really at the forefront of the scientific research at the moment. And unfortunately, we just don't have those answers.
From the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies in Tasmania, we've been speaking with Dr. Edward Doddridge. You can find links to all the science we just talked about in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Edward, thank you for sharing your time with our listeners. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.